Howdy, everyone. This is Kurt here at the beginning of the podcast, and I just wanted to give you a special announcement of events, of live events happening in the month of March 2024. Easter weekend, that is the last weekend in March, the 29th through the 31st, I am going to be at the very first inaugural FateCon TTRPG experience that's going to be happening at the Bob Duncan Center in Arlington, Texas. If you remember from my episode with the Five-Sided Fates, they talked about this con that they were putting on. It's exclusively for Dungeons and Dragons. It's a way to help introduce the hobby to people who may not know about it, and to help provide games for people to be able to hop in and join and play. And because I was so intrigued by it, I applied. And so I'm happy to announce that on Friday, the 29th, I will be doing a live podcast episode. So I'm very excited about that. Can't wait to get that done and to see everyone at FateCon to be able to record that episode. As well as on Saturday, the 30th, I am going to be running two different games. That's right. I'm going to be running a level 13 and a level 15 one-shot. The level 13 one is based on our character, Levity Butterleaf, from the podcast. And I'm adapting an MCDM production, Where Evil Lies, solo boss monster encounter. So you're going to get to fight Magnus the Vampire. Can you capture him alive? Ooh. And then the other level 15 game that I'm going to be running is going to be called Hallowed Be Thy Name. And it is a undead horde meat grinder game in which you are defending the last zone in a line to hold back the undying horde. You know, can you survive waves and waves of skeletons and zombies and who knows what other sorts of undead nasties may come your way? So if you would like to get tickets for the games that I'm running on Saturday, you can definitely sign up and do that. And I believe the podcast live recording episode is just going to be, hey, you show up and you're there. Again, the podcast is live recording is happening on Friday, the 29th at 7 p.m. Central. And then I'm running two different games on the Saturday, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. So if you want to be able to get a badge, a single day badge, $30. Or if you want to be able to go all 3 days of the event, $50. And that is a great bargain for a local to the DFW area convention. Or, you know, if you want to make a travel for the weekend, then I would encourage you to do that to my neck of the woods. So if you want to learn more and you want to buy your ticket, you want to sign up for a game with me, or you want to catch a live recording of the podcast, please go to the website, FiveSidedFates.com. Again, FiveSidedFates.com. Get your badges, which are on sale now. $30 for a single day, $50 for the whole weekend. Loads of other great DMs and vendors and events and things to do, and I can't wait to see you there.
Hark, the bardic paladin who sings and plays again. He tells the tales of glory and weaves a magic story. He'll join you at your table and ask you to share a fable. Heroes of humble origin, villains who must be fought again. No matter their skill or prowess, the people in life are countless. So we pray you heed our request. Enjoy this tale of sidekicks and side quests.
Sidekicks and side quests.
And side quests.
Sidekicks and side quests.
Episode 122. Lugo Abergast, the Pentadrone. Welcome to Sidekicks and Side Quests, the Dungeons & Dragons podcast that helps to put humans back into humanity and breathe life into your campaign NPCs with backstory and bravado. That's right, we're building a world, one character at a time. I am your host, Kurt Krenwelge, the Bardic Paladin, and I'll be joining Chef Mike Harris's table in the Levitating Platter. welcome to another exciting episode of Sidekicks and Side Quests, the best unofficial Dungeons & Dragons podcast, in my humbly biased opinion. I've got an amazing guest for you this week, but before I get to my guest, I got to leave you in suspense with the ad read. This episode is brought to you by my first sponsor, Plus One EXP, and their brand new monthly subscription service for RPG Zine Club. Of course, you've heard me talk about this service. It's a monthly subscription service featuring fresh zines from emerging and expanding creators across the globe. Our way of inviting GMs, players, and zine lovers everywhere to invest more intentionally in the creative community. It's crowdsourced support without crowdfunding. You're getting two 20 to 44 page Staddle Sitch zines. You can pick from story zines, adventure zines, or both. You have the ability to get print and digital or just digital. There is an exclusive Clubhouse Discord channel within Plus One EXP Discord community. You're getting the best prices. You have the ability to manage your subscription portal, and you can add products or change your information. You have the ability to change your frequency of how often you're wanting to be receiving new zines and titles, and you can get what you want. In fact, if you miss something cool and you want to get it, you can add it to your recent month's order in order to get a copy of it. You get a special surprise gift each February after your first anniversary. Again, you're getting access to interviews, how to play videos, and special content for Zine Club titles. And if you get one of our RPG Zine Club passports, you can redeem it for a slice of pizza at a convention that Tony's attending if you fill that passport up. Again, we're sourcing the best voices from across the RPG design community. We curate zines based on the community interest and feedback to help you discover your new favorite creators. It has DIE focus because, you know, Plus One is committed to championing diversity, inclusion, and equity in projects. Creators with diverse experiences make our community better. So Zine Club prioritizes creating equity for all our creators. Your subscription will allow Plus One EXP to more heavily invest in print partners and provide them with potentially life-changing support by consolidating scores or hundreds of purchases as the club grows. So I could sit here and read more and more, and I think the best source to learn more about this awesome program to sign up for yourself is if you go to the website rpgzine.club. Again, rpgzine.club. It's part of the website plusoneexp.com, which again, if you're going to go on that site and buy yourself a beard balm, a lip balm, RPG for beards or whatnot, and you're looking for an affiliate code to use on that site, be sure to use the code Randolph at checkout to save some coin on your purchase at no extra cost to you. Again, the code is Randolph at checkout on the website, plusoneexp.com, and make sure you check out the brand new monthly subscription service for rpgzine.club. All right, so without further ado, I turn the microphone over to my very saintly and patient guest, and I ask, who is it that you are and what is it that you do?
Hi, my name is Mike Harris. I am a research chef, and I am also the host of Heroes Feast, which is on Amazon, Freevee, and Plex right now, based off of the D&D cookbook Heroes Feast, which is also based on in-game mechanics. So yes, I'm on that thing.
Yeah, I know we've got both of those cookbooks on our shelf, and we're just dying for an opportunity to be able to dive into those cookbooks, to be able to bring forth those heroic feasts of our own as we're, you know, hosting maybe a hopeful future D&D game or something at our house.
Ooh, very exciting.
And I've been following you on social media. Of course, you did a fantastic interview way back when with my buddy Andrew Strother on his Roll for Persuasion podcast. So if you haven't listened to that interview, definitely I would encourage you to listen to that. So not that it's a thing of like, oh, let's tread familiar ground and go over all the same things, because my shtick is a little different. As a father of a young child, you know, my wife loves watching YouTube cooking shows and stuff like that. So I was excited when I heard that you were doing these shows. So I said, oh, look, we can combine all of our loves together, Dungeons and Dragons and your cooking shows that you like to watch on YouTube now on this freebie. And so like we're ready to you know, when I've heard, I think I've seen you share on social media that it's like, oh, that's something that's forthcoming. But we're waiting on that to happen. So then that way we can dive in and watch as well. We're excited to see these recipes come to life.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it is now, as of very recently, available on Plex, where you can search Heroes Feast and find episodes on demand. So I think that's available now. And I do want to note, I did not write the cookbooks. Mm-hmm. So if you are learning to cook, if you are uncomfortable in the kitchen, guess what? I am cooking these for the first time on the show with my co-host and guests who are not chefs. So we are figuring things out together. So that way you can see like, hey, we might make a mistake. This is how you fix it. Everyone relax. It'll be cool. So it's a pretty inviting scenario if you want to cook along. So now you can look at the recipe in the book and follow us along as a tutorial, kind of, because there's slight TV magic, but not really. Mm. We are cooking the thing we are eating for the most part, which is very different from a cooking show as well.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's good to know. That fills me with a lot of confidence. Speaking of social media, as I've seen you in your little bios on X, Twitter, or Instagram, you kind of have some like cred in the nerd scene, am I right? Because, you know, you said research, food, chef, scientist, and you were like instrumental behind some stuff with a major fast food company and stuff, right?
That is correct. So I was a corporate chef for McDonald's. So if you follow me on TikTok, you're very aware of that, because that's pretty much all I talk about on TikTok because the algorithm likes it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was also part of the Szechuan sauce fiasco with Rick and Morty. while I was at McDonald's, I tried to convince them to really go all in on like gaming stuff, whether that's integrate with video game brands, have a presence at the Game Awards. So like I got Jeff Keighley to come out, had lunch with him multiple times. Like, McDonald's, you should do something with him and this event. So I think it was the 2017 Video Game Awards. I was on the red carpet interviewing like as a press junket in a chef coat. So people walk up and be like, what are you? It seemed like people liked the fact that I was a chef in this line. So they passed up a lot of actual credible interviewer people to talk to me because this is different. What's going on here? So I got to do that, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm of the appropriate age where I've been playing all the video games all my life. You know, social media all appeared while I was, you know, in junior high and high school and all that. The Facebook came to my college while I was there. So like you had to have a school ID to do it. So I've just been like had this my entire life. And video gaming has been, and tabletop obviously has been quite an influence. And that's how I won the lotto. See, it's really easy to just, oh, are you going to let the people know? We're going to get through this, but we've had a little bit of technical difficulties, a little late, but we're going to figure, we're making it happen.
Yep. Yeah. Editor's note. Yeah. 2024 is already off to a wild start as far as this podcast season 5 is concerned.
Nice.
So you had this opportunity to interview on the red carpet in a chef's outfit. So, you know, not only just the gimmick of it, but like you brought the genuine spirit and nerd presence. And you're like, no, I've been steeped in this culture all my life. And I just happen to have a passion for cooking and food and what goes into it and all this stuff.
Yes. I've always had like kind of like a main gig. So being a research chef and things like that, I've always had side thing. I always do ridiculous things on the side. So whether it's talk about my love for gaming, play guitar in a bunch of hard rock metal bands, got into running a marathon, got into playing darts, golf, competition barbecue. Like I always do just goofy things on the side for fun. And, you know, trying to build a social media presence as well. I early on kind of felt that it's important to have influence. Unfortunately, that's kind of how the world works, which
when the pandemic hit, I actually lost my role in a different job and had to figure out what to do. So I was able to not only be a consultant for the research chef stuff, but I became content creator Chef Mike as well, started a YouTube page and got some brand deals to kind of help support my family at that time. Early COVID days were not great for the finances, but being able to like do a little bit of everything, I was able to, pay some bills and still talk about all the things that I love.
Wonderful. Excellent. And listeners can't see, but I'm holding up a prayer gesture, thank the Lord symbol in my hand, because we've made it past our barrier where we've been having issues. So I feel like now the fates, the D20 rolls are in our favor now. So as we keep on this theme of, you know, this being a Dungeons and Dragons podcast, maybe not a conventional one, not an actual play, but an interview show, I do have to ask, do you currently, or have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons before?
I have a Dungeons and Dragons tattoo on my body right there.
Wow.
So yes, we have met. I currently play in a 3.5 edition and DM a 5e. They are both super homebrew, so I am not an expert in specific D&D lore. In both games, like the DM for the other game and what I do in my game, it is almost exclusively homebrew campaign, storyline, settings, and all that. You know, when I decided to DM my 5e game, I was like, how should I start? So I was on Devin Rue's website, and she makes the, you know, amazing cartographer. And there was just this poster of like, that looks like a cool setting. It's called like Euphoro's Peninsula. It had town names. I'm like, this is where I'm going to start. So I bought that and I'm like, start writing. Let's create a world. What are my players going to do? What's the shtick and all that? So again, I love me some Dungeons and Dragons, but super D&D nerds are upset that I don't have the lore knowledge, you know, backing settings and pantheon of gods and all that stuff. But that's okay. I love it my own way.
Yeah, no, for sure. Or if you listen to season one episodes, you know, again, talking about the thick of the pandemic, I was like, oh, I need to like boost up my content. I'll do in between week episodes and I'll just start sharing like homebrew notes. And a lot of it covers like a lot of pantheons of my world and stuff like that. And, you know, the aim with this podcast is to help other dungeon masters and other players out there that it's like, hey, if you need just an NPC, but there's like a whole world flesh around the NPC, you can figure out a way to like plug in that NPC into your game. And suddenly now your players are interested in undead wizard lich beekeepers in the world when maybe they didn't exist before. So
yeah.
So with this podcast being called Sidekicks and Side Quests, we like to ask the question, who is your favorite NPC, whether they be from a RPG, a video game, maybe one of your games that you run or play in, or if not, maybe they're from a piece of literature, movie, film, television, etc. And why, again, why is this character your favorite sidekick or your favorite NPC?
So I'm going to slightly break the rules because you can play as this character in the game, but they are not efficient and they're a background character. So some of my favorite video games of all times are the JRPGs, which are, I believe I'm saying it right, Suikoden and Suikoden 2, or Suikoden, S-U-I-K-O-D-E-N. And those were one of the first games where you can be a chef character.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, I gotta play the chef character. Again, they're not the most efficient. The shtick of the game is you could choose 108 different characters once you have a full roster. So you have a party of six and you can mix and match whoever you want to play, outfit them however you want. Strategically, they're not the strongest, you know, character.
Now I'm reminded, I think one time on a post, you said something about like, oh, where's Marvel Comics or where DC Comics with the chef superhero? And I think I did end up sharing a link to you from the podcast account. I was like, oh yeah, Marvel did end up making a chef superhero character that you could read about. Maybe it was a smaller print run, But yeah, so I was like, that's cool. So you found a video game, two video games that would allow you to play as a chef character, integrate them into your party.
Absolutely. Like, you know, food and cooking were already in other video games and stuff like that. But this is the first time I felt like his role in the game is chef and you could play as him. So in Suikoden 2, Hayo is the name of the character. And also what I like about him, so he steals this secret family recipe and has these like techniques that he uses. So the rest of the chef clan are like trying to Iron Chef battle him to get the recipe back. And what he learned, you know, what he tries to bestow on other people and teach them is F your technique. It's about making other people happy. It's about putting TLC into what you do. I don't need a recipe for that. We're creating. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel as, you know, a person as well. So there was a lot to relate to with that character. So, and then he was, you know, he ran the restaurant in this castle, feeding the armies, feeding the other characters. And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of his. So you can't play as him, but he is a background character. I'm still going to go with him.
Awesome. And then same thing, what has been one of your favorite side quests, whether it's been an RPG, video game, movie, film, television, etc., and why has this side quest, this B plot element, stuck with you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I unfortunately kind of answered that in my last shtick was it's the journey of finding out that, like, hey, I'm going to battle, you know, this highly technical, well-trained, every metric that other person should win, but they might have that chip on their shoulder, cocky attitude of like, this is how it should taste. This is how I want to make it. And Hayo's character was like, no, I'm going to cook for other people what they want and cook with passion and heart and things like that. So that was a pretty big, you know, influence and kind of little quest of the game that I liked. What would be another good one? I also play, and this is a little more modern, but still an older game. It's called Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning. Mm. And it's a game where in the media, the studio went bankrupt. They were based in Rhode Island. There was like all this hype for the game and then the studio went under and all that stuff. But there are all these little side quests of, I need you to find these reagents to make these potions to heal the town. So you have to go and explore and find these ingredients to mix together to make a thing to solve the problems. And that was always a fun little adventure because I will exploit everything that is allowed to level up my character as fast as possible. If it's in the game and you did not stop me from, I will exploit it 100% of the time to level up to the best of my ability. And that was one of those things like, I could just do these little side quests and just become a beast of a character doing all of these side quests. And that's always my shtick. Even when I try not to do it, I just continually do it.
Right. So if it's like rats in the basement, just there's always rats in the basement or Fallout 4 where you just went into the building. I'm just going to put a bunch of fence posts all around here and just get experience points for it because all I'm doing is just putting, you know, I'm just building things in settlements and stuff like that. Now suddenly I can like one shot anyone that comes along in the game.
Love and Fallout 4. I crushed Fallout 4. Every city, I took over every place, walls over everything, like the most efficient. In Cyberpunk, you know, 2070 is the newest one. There's an area where you have to like go through a minefield of like hundreds of mines and you get experience points for deactivating or activating and do it. And I'm like, I'll go through every single one of these. I'll take as much time as I need, get the experience points for deactivating these mines with, you know, you put it in the game, I'm going to do it.
Well, yeah, the same thing with the Fallout 3, and there was the minefield one. You just said, you just saying that, and I know it's not the same developer, but you know the same idea, kind of a thing. But yeah, well, I'm also a 76 player. I've taken a break from it because I'm finally getting around to playing Doom 2016. So that's been fun to be the Doom Slayer. and yes. all that. So, yeah. And then the final question we ask in the personal interview section of the show, what are you passionate about and why?
I'm passionate about a lot of things. What I'm most passionate about is like helping other people, living my best dad life. So I you know, raising my two little girls to be badasses, helping those that maybe are underrepresented, underprivileged, if there's things I could do. So I currently work for a big old corporation no one's ever heard of, in a building with a lot of shared kitchens. And I'm next to mom and pop caterers that are like, this is their life and they might be struggling. So anything I can do to help support and provide and, you know, kind of put smile on people's faces, that's what I like doing. And I always like having something fun on the side to either learn about or, you know, get my stresses out doing it, or hit that Dunning-Kruger level of I know enough about this subject to realize I don't know, or I'm bad at the thing, but I know I'm bad. I don't have unrealistic, like, I love golf. I am so bad. I lose dozens of balls playing, but I love it. But I learned enough about it to know, like, the ins and outs, how I should be getting better, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So it's kind of, I just love learning about a lot of different things.
Yeah, I think the Bards said it best. Operation Ivy, all I know is that I don't know. All I know mm-hmm. is that I don't know nothing.
Fact.
All right. Well, technical difficulties aside and all that, we made it through the personal interview section. That now I think it's time to head into some NPC creation.
Yes. I have paper, notes. I got my dice ready.
All right. Yes. The enthusiasm, and we should carry that through with the thank you, of course, to our patrons on Patreon. They're the ones who bring us and sponsor NPC creation. So now is the time of the show where we give our shout outs to everyone who supports us. So the queen of the Patreon, of course, is Katie Downey, aka Goblin Katie, and of course our other wealthy level patrons as well, including Anson Jablinski and Nicholas Cardarelli and good old mom and dad. We say cheers and thank you so much. Again, if you want to learn more about the Patreon and all the rewards that come with all the different expense levels, you know, they model what's represented in D&D 5e. So comfortable, wealthy, and aristocratic accommodations await for you. So learn more by going to the show notes below, go to my podcast website, or just go directly to patreon.com/sidekicksandsidequests and help us expand our operations in the levitating platter in this demiplane and worlds beyond.
Shout out to mom and dad. My mom and dad were the son, you're playing a metal show at 1 a.m. at some dive bar. Fine. We'll be there. And they're always there. So they were the old people who were the, thank you, mom and dad, for supporting.
Yeah, no, we are big proponents of familial love and, you know, parents supporting their children for sure. So, yeah, so now is the part of the show. We get to do the sidekick part. We get to make up a character. So I know we talked a little bit beforehand, but you have an idea and then I've got random tables we can go through to roll dice. So it's up to you. Are we going to do a combo of both, pick one or the other, or how should we begin?
Maybe a combo of both, because I got notes, so I was playing around with an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Couple things I want to make maybe not the most efficient NPC, so we might, you know, making sure the min-max is appropriate, no concern to me whatsoever.
Excellent.
I had the idea of somebody who has the fighting ability of a monk while being a very savvy business person who was a antiquities kind of store owner that got so popular and they had multiple locations and then sold it off to somebody. So now they live roaming around consulting with locals on how to run their antiquity businesses and things of that nature. So there's a lot of intelligent and wisdom and monk-related shenanigans with this type of character.
I know it's in the news recently because, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson just got to be named on the board of directors for the company that owns the WWE, which I speculated on vacation. I was like, oh, there was some like big thing that happened with The Rock on social media. I wonder if that means like, is he just going to buy like the WWE or something like that? But I guess being on the board of directors.
Yeah, or at least have that influence, to be an executive level individual.
Right. So I'm getting major The Rock vibes, but it's like, I was a monk and it's like, I'm so successful and stuff like that. And I've got all these businesses. Now I'm just going to be on the road and doing my thing and consulting and just like, you know, where's the sharp suits or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't suspect. Yeah.
I want a little, yes, I agree with that 1,000, but a little less conspicuous than somebody who looks like The Rock showing up, but that makes, but absolutely understand what you're going with. So like, even if a little slenderish, but like, you know, Bruce Lee under his clothes is just absolute ripped. But if it's somebody in a nice, you know, vest with maybe like a leathery trench coat that also has a lot of pockets to hide some things, maybe like a pocket watch and not over the top, not full of themselves, not dressing to impress per se, but understanding like not plain clothes, but you know, I'm well put together. I savvy kind of individual.
Perfect. So yeah, the unsuspecting level 20 monk, when your players are being a little uppity and they're being mean to this guy. And then suddenly, you know, he does a 3-inch punch and there's like a giant crater of a hole in the chest of the perfect.
Yeah. It was not logical. It was not logical of you to act in this manner, especially when we have these XYZ reasons why. I want this person to be very savvy, very witty. Like, you know what? I don't recommend you talk to me like that right now, just because now you're in disrespectful territory. Like, we'll let it go. No, I really recommend you do not do that. It is not going to end well for you. So you're going to need to calm down. And then if it's game time, he can just end it real quick. And listen, I told you what was going to happen. We talked it out. You're now on the floor. I'll get you some ice. I told you exactly what was going to happen. So that kind of, and someone who, you know, this is not the person who wants to go out and fight dragons. Mm-hmm. This is a person who can organize a team, understanding strengths and weaknesses, plan accordingly, do research. So I guess maybe a little, I'm trying to make someone who could do, I guess, a little bit of everything, I guess, but is not the most like dealing damage in a mass, you know, mass level kind of thing, but can influence, understands influence. So I even have a little notes once we get to it about the side quest, what it can be. So
perfect. Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like we've got a wild ambition. So we'll take those in and then maybe we'll throw a little chaos in with some dice rolls and see how it changes the character. So the first question we have is, what is the name of our character? So if you got that, or if you want to roll the dice, we have that.
Got it. I have a, because again, as a DM, I forget where it's right here. It is called Kismet's Fantasy Name Compendium. And there are, let's see, 7,725 names in alphabetical order.
Okay. That
you can combine however you want. So I came up with Lugo Abergast, and that's two A's at the end, so that way if they're listed in any kind of something or other, it's two A's, which puts them first on a list in alphabetical order, which is strategic, so you see his name first. Yes.
Strategic for sure. So L-U-G-O, Lugo, and then Abergast, A-B-E-R-G-A-A-S-T?
A-A-B-E-R-G-A-S-T. You got to have the two A's at the beginning. So that way, in alphabet, and that, this is the person who started Abergast Antiquities, who then sold it off. So his name, his brand is out there, but he actually has no association with Abergast Antiquities anymore.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I like it. Okay. And then let's see. Okay. So the next question here, what is the ancestry of our character?
This is where we could either roll or discuss, because I want some monk,
mm-hmm.
but I want high wisdom and intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be as inefficient, you know, whichever, it could be any race that does not help in any of those scenarios.
Sure, yeah.
I think I once played like a Goliath monk, which does not, it's strength, you know, Goliath, you get a bunch of stat boosts in strength, but mm-hmm. monks is dexterity based, so that does not help at all whatsoever. So I'm trying to think of what would be a good, like, wisdom, intelligent, boosted race.
Do you want to try and do some D100 rolls and maybe see what we populate, maybe get a pool and then see what yes. you like from there?
Yes. Love it. Let me get my dice. Cool. And I have percentile and my D10s ready to go.
Excellent. So, yeah, if you want to give us a D100 roll, let's see what a possibility is.
85.
85, scrolling down the list. Okay, interesting. Do you think that a Lugo Abergast is possibly a Modron?
Okay, let's make it. The dice decided this for us. I'm fine with that.
Okay, well, I know with Modrons, I think the higher your number, it's like the bigger you are in the pecking order, because like if you're just a one, then like you're just like a drone. But if you're like up to five, then you're like pretty important or something. So do you think Lugo is like one of these, the five version of a Modron, as I very quickly here try on my phone and figure out, hey, what are all the different Modrons called?
Yeah, I would say, because this is somebody who built a business, somebody who, again, smart, savvy, can live in the world of big business and corporate executive controls. So, you know, that relates to running a town, or, you know, understanding how to like schmooze a king or queen or mm-hmm. whatever it might be. So I would say someone who was upper echelon, but is not, you know, full of themselves, understands in that manner.
I see. So, yeah. So just for our audience out there, again, if you haven't flipped that far into the monster manual to figure out what a Modron is, they've been around since the earliest editions of D&D, but you have monodrones, duodrones, tridrones, quadrones, and pentadrones. And if we're imagining that like maybe Lugo is like a pentadrone, that means he's like a category large size creature going around mm-hmm. challenge rating two. So, you know, of course a DM can monkey with the stats. Like, sure, if I want to make a pentadrone just walking around the world who started this antiquities business empire and now all of a sudden being a monk on the road and just consulting and stuff. Or if you want to roll again on the D100s, you're more than welcome to as well.
The dice giveth and the dice taketh.
Okay. All right. So the pentadrone known as Lugo Abergast. Okay. And of course, you know, in this podcast, we're also, you were mentioning you do a lot of homebrew stuff. I certainly do a lot of homebrew stuff. I don't have the Forgotten Realms downloaded in my brain. So if we go off script and it's not what it says that a Modron can do, well, then this particular unique Modron, this is how he do. So we'll say that to our naysayers and the angry, I don't ever get angry or mean comments, but maybe this will be the one that does it. Who knows? It just will feed into the algorithm or whatnot. So it sounds like we got the jobber role in society already figured out, that, you know, he's this merchant prince or merchant king, however you wish to envision that, correct? Started the business, sold it, and now is just traveling the world, seeing the world.
I did. I succeeded. What I thought might have taken a lifetime, I quickly figured everything out. It got to a size where it's like, you know what? I'm happy with what's going on here. I'm going to unload this for others to continue on. So now I have the ability, like I have no ties. I can go do, it's almost like a cowboy movie or a roaming samurai kung fu type. Like I'm going to go town to town and help like the little guy out and help those in need. And, you know, even though I grew a business appropriately, maybe he's looking for those that wish ill will on others or those that are, you know, not doing things in an appropriate, just manner. Mm-hmm. And that'll tie into a little side quest idea that I have a little later.
There we go. And how old do you imagine this character is? If he's a Modron and he's a Pentadrone, what, I don't even know the concept of age.
I don't
age.
Know. Yeah. Is there a range for that?
Yeah. Let me see if I can very quickly find abilities. Society. Yeah. I don't know. Physiological. It doesn't really say anything about ages on this wiki page I'm looking at, unless more. Oh, well, I mean, I guess if the idea of a Modron is that the lore says like, oh, they're from the plane of like pure law, you know, they're these extra dimensional type of beings. So does Lugo view himself as having an age? Huh. Is that a concept to him?
Yeah, maybe it's not an age. It's just I have certain benchmarks that I want to hit in my existence. And once I reach those, I can walk off into the sunset and just end existing or something of that nature. Where like when I feel like I've helped enough people or the world is in a place that I'm happy with, I'm gone.
Perfect. All right.
Age unknown, question mark.
Perfect. So then, yeah, now we get to take a pause from our dice rolling. If I always have fun saying that, because now it's just a purely, you know, thought exploration, sort of a question of describe the physical appearance. If we know that, you know, he's a pentadrone, so he doesn't maybe necessarily have an age, but he is this merchant genius with the antiquities business who's now sold it and is this trained monk fighter and is named Lugo Abragas. When you have all those details in mind and kind of some of the inspiration we were drawing on, can you describe the physical appearance of this character?
This is going to be, I would say, remember how we were talking about, I want him to have a vest. I want him or them, they, to have almost like an overcoat, trench coat. If the appendages of his body actually form the vest and the trench coat, it knows it wants to look a little more human presenting, or at least, you know, more, you know, standard, let's say, humanish type form.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the appendage is held on his body in a way that makes it look like appropriate trench coat vest clothing, while having still obviously having an interesting face as they do. I think that could be an interesting, like it's self-aware of its own look that it's trying to present in an appropriate, like, yeah, I know I'm a pentadrone, but, you know, I can still act somewhat like a normal society type entity, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say you were describing that and I was totally getting original 1980s. Early 1990s animated Ninja Turtle vibes, because they, you know, okay. they wear the trench coats and they have the hat. They still have their bandanas with their coloration, and they still obviously look like a giant humanoid turtle. But it's like, oh, because I'm wearing the trench coat and the hat, it's like I'm not as conspicuous, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I like that idea. So it even like, man, that is a hard one. And I don't want it to be like intimidating, big, bulky either, you know, not The Rock or not a menacing big machine thing. I want it to still like it understands emotion. I mean, because which is kind of goes against the well, I guess not really.
Well, they exist higher up in the pyramid, the hierarchy or whatever like that. So they have more access to, you know, information and being able to process things and stuff versus like a little monodrone maybe can just only talk in like bits and like yes or no and like just garbled sort of speak, whereas
R2 beeps.
Yeah, R2 beeps, whereas like, you know, this is more of like a bigger, more exaggerated version of C-3PO or something like that.
Okay, yeah, I like that idea.
And maybe he's a unique pentadrone. I mean, as long as he has like, I guess, five sides or something like that to represent, you know, maybe the limbs, you know, because maybe he's an experimental pentadrone, you know, to be made more like actual yeah. passing on humanoid.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like if it's more star shaped entity where one appendage is almost face like.
Mm-hmm.
The two lower appendages go across. He holds himself across his body like a vest. Mm-hmm. The other two might be a jacket looking thing, or that could be more standard, not really standard arm looking, but you know, he tries to present in a professional-ish type manner, real mm-hmm. with self-awareness that he's a pentadrone, and that's might be a little awkward looking.
There we go. Yeah, and then of course with his mind, he's able to have all these fantastic business insights, which is how he's been able to succeed as a consultant.
Yeah, sense. Probability and statistics, understanding trends, understanding marketing and how to market.
I am plugged into the algorithm. Yes, I hear the algorithm speak to me.
It is its own algorithm that then I know how, and like this antiquity, I know that this thing, this precious jewel, actually has no worth, but people want to spend a lot of money on this diamond or this whatever. Mm-hmm. So business savvy, I'm going to sell it for the appropriate price, the fair market value based on what other people want, even though in my heart of heart, I know precious gem is basically worthless. It's shiny.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not a lot of it. That is why it is worth a lot. Okay, other people, I'm going to make a business out of that. So that's awesome. Interesting. I like that.
Yeah. As we're exploring and figuring out who Lugo Abergast is, if you had to describe them with three adjectives, what three adjectives would you use?
Savvy was one.
Okay.
Empathetic. I don't know how it learned or understands or being, oh man, that's hard. That dice threw a wrench in the plan for sure. And I was going to say witty, but it's almost like AI wittiness that it figured out, it knows what to say and you believe it, even though it might have just been programmed to say that.
Right. Yeah. Like he spent so long of his life mm-hmm. just observing and then just like building these models and figuring out like, oh, when someone says this is the most appropriate thing that I should mm-hmm. say that will yield the sale or whatever.
Yeah. And you know, you could even go as far as, and I consider this a positive, appropriately woke based on who they are talking to. I can't say that in, you know, in an elvish territory, but maybe mm-hmm. if I'm talking to dwarves, that would be appropriate to say, or this, that. So it is very aware of who they're talking to, how to appropriately get points across, understanding mm-hmm. hierarchy. Like you said, a single drone, it just beeps and whatnot, so it understands hierarchy and how all that works, so mm-hmm. it can appropriately make quick-witted comments and things like that, while also being empathetic, where, oh, that's not logical to be mean, and this group is not getting what it needs while these other people have excess of the thing. That does not compute, and that is not right. So
it's
that should
lawful.
Be fixed. Correct. Yeah, that does not compute. So that makes some sense. That makes some sense.
Very good. There we go. Okay. We're trucking along, and we're getting into some interesting territory here because we like our NPCs to have something valuable on their person. So what is going to be a valuable item, a piece of lore, a secret, or an ideal or concept that the character would ascribe to? So, you know, you have some that we've shared and we can totally go with those and use those. But if you're interested, you can roll a D4 and a D6, and then maybe we can see maybe what's something else that they have.
Love it. I like the idea of rolling. Let's do it. One on the D4.
Okay. Item.
And a 6 on the D6. Excellent.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Your answer was provided by previous guest, Dr. Paul Guestwicky. Lugo Abergast, and this probably fits in great with the antiquities business, has a dolphin-shaped ivory comb.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll say Lugo is a he. Because it is, you know, somewhat mechanical, ish type, you know, it thinks that sea creatures and whatnot are so majestic and free. Like, it is a complete opposite of what Lugo is, that it like cherishes this item, and it is intrinsic of maybe it's not valuable to other people, but what it makes Lugo feel, it's valuable to him. So this is not a valuable item necessarily. It's, you know, it's not a precious gem, which in an antiquities, you know, that type of scenario, maybe it could even be something common or something like that. But maybe this was the first step in him understanding like beauty of some kind, or like uniqueness, and that is something that kind of converted it to being just logical algorithm, numbers, and sense. So that's where empathy comes in. Like, okay, now I understand, to me this means something, where to other people it might not. So precious heirloom, family heirlooms, that maybe he's like, that's not logical, to it's useless, it's not, you know, it's whatever it might be, like it's not even well made, or it's but if it brings emotional connection, okay, now I understand what that means. So it almost taught him how to have empathy by, for whatever reason, he's infatuated with this thing. I like it. I like it.
Now we get to the point, which I know you've alluded to with the side quest. So what is a side quest that Lugo Abergast would be willing to recruit or hire player characters to go and do?
Okay. Lugo has been traveling around doing his thing. Goes to random city. Large city. Random city, you know, would Lugo ingest beer or alcohol and then he doesn't need to eat? I'm not as...
If you want this particular unit to have to consume organic materials for sustenance, you can go for it. I think, you know, when you kill a Modron, they kind of explode in like some sort of organic goop, but then also just like dust and stuff. So there has to be like some component in them that requires nourishment, but you know,
okay.
The lore may say it may have to be something else, but you know, sure. if our dude needs beer, if he's a beer robot, then he needs beer.
That is what, at least the understanding of a recreational like beverage or some sustenance that's like, I'm only ingesting this for pleasure. It makes us happy. So goes into major city, finds out that there's a mega brew house that is either both watering down their beverage, but also inhibiting the small folk to not prosper in this area by unjust, unlawful means. So maybe it's ruining promotional material, creating smear campaigns with false information that are talking bad about the people who run the business or their product or whatever it might be. Greasing palms of pub owners to only sell their alcohol and not the craft people who are doing it for love and for, you know, for the right and doing it appropriate business sense wise. He is so logical. He would look at the small guys and be like, you're doing everything right. I don't understand why you're not succeeding in this market. It does not make any sense to me, because you are marketing appropriately. Your product, based on what everyone says, is far superior. It's at a perfect price, yada, yada. All of those things, like, you should be winning and you're not. Why is that? So this side quest is to understand, okay, maybe there's some shenanigans going on and we want to bring down big beer or big ale in this city to create big a ale. Co-op, the big ale to create to create a co-op of the smaller guys to prosper in an appropriate manner.
And I know it's going to be on everyone's tip of their tongue. Is big ale run by the dwarves? Is that what's happening?
I would imagine so, and I will use a beer brand or an ale brand that I named in one of my games. They are the big bad ale company. They're called Bell End Brewery, where if you're in the UK or Europe, bell end is a very inappropriate comment for a thing. So they're dicks.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Literally and figuratively. I don't know if this is a PG show. You could bleep that out. But bell end is a term that I learned when I lived in the UK. A very phallic end of a item that looks like a bell.
Okay.
So Bell and Brewery, they're the bad guys.
They're the bad guys, yeah. And, you know, big ale, big, these dwarves that are like cornering the market and using every dirty trick to try and, upend, the good, honest, beer craft makers in the community, in the town. Okay. And so then this Modron notices and, you know, because he's logical and cares about, success, for these little guys, he wants to take it upon himself, even though, you know, maybe his expertise is like antiquities business, but because he has this mechanical, logical mind, he knows what the problem is, but maybe for whatever reason, he's not fit or capable or necessarily wanting to involve himself personally, but he has the means to be able to hire people to go and take care of it.
Right. Even though, you know, his specialty is antiquity, so he is more knowledgeable in that world of this is valuable, this is how it market. Once you are business savvy enough to know how things work, like I said, he shows up and he's like, all of the data says you small folk are far superior in every way to big ale. It does not make sense. It does not compute. That's wrong. I need to fix this because this is not right. Mm. And maybe in his past, he's had to deal with other antiquity owners or antiquity peddlers lying about their items or inflating value or all of these things. Like, I'm very knowledgeable. I've had to deal with that in my antiquities business before. So just no matter what you're selling, same principles apply here.
Sure.
So he wants to intervene and, you know, maybe he even being logical, the smear campaign, like, guess what? I determined who in the city are the big influential people. We don't need the king and queen to yell, this is the greatest one. You need the person who runs the dock, who's, you know, party animal everybody loves. That's the person we need to influence. So let's start there with a little smear campaign action. Let's go get some samples of big ale and compare it and have numbers and data supporting, like, look at this beer is watered down. Ours is so much more flavor. And, you know, even though he may not comprehend the ambiance of a, you know, the head of this ale, just the aromatics, and he may not drink it and be like, that's what I want, but he knows that's what the customer wants, and he could talk in a manner that makes the people happy based on who they are. So maybe it's high elves that, like, listen, this is not just average ale, okay? This is an upper class experience where you get the notes of whatever, whatever. And then maybe he's talking to other dwarves and he's like, yo, this will get you want a party? This is the party drink, okay? This is going to get you smashed with minimal hangover. It's affordable. It's great for bashing big flagons together. So he knows how to talk to all these different groups and make the influence happen there. And then if anybody crosses him and he's the fisticuffs, if somebody goes that far, he'll take care of that business as well. So like I said, not a big – he's not going to fight a huge entity. But if some, you know, hey, we hear you're trying to get in on our turf. And he says, no, I'm doing everything appropriate because you're lying. You're doing this. I tell you what, we're going to, you know, we'll take care of you. I'm like, no, I don't recommend you do that. This is not going to end well for you. Everything I said is true. You're being a piece of trash and you should be lawful and do it the right way. And if they step on his toes, he's going to respond, dust himself off. All right, now let's go do the next thing. I've got my itinerary lined up.
So then as far as the player characters are concerned, when Lugo Abergast is recruiting them, what is he going to send them to do? Is he going to pick one of these things for them to do, like, hey, I need you to go talk to this person because they're the influential person. And then that starts the domino to slowly take down Big Ale. Or Lugo's going to be like, I've determined that the most, you know, the way to cut the legs out from under this thing is you need to go confront the owners of Big Ale, then like get into a tussle with them. And then that's the way to solve this.
It might be everything. He'll know that if you just get into straight fisticuffs, that is not going to convince the populace that our stuff is better. So we need to do that. We know we need to get physically attractive individuals to start, you know, maybe he is finding people who can increase their status in the town. Like, oh, you need to schmooze this and now you're becoming more influential. Maybe they have a certain look to them that male, female, whoever folk are attracted to. But listen, no, you are part of this group because people are going to find you aesthetically pleasing. Use that to your advantage. If anyone goes too far, you let me know and I will intervene. So only do it to an appropriate level that will entice people to buy our beverage. I got you. This person influences the town crier or media, you know, whatever, not media, but you know what I mean? Whoever's, however they get their information from and be like, listen, can you, we did some tests here and it shows our beer is better. Can you let people know that ours is obviously better? So he's playing chess while everyone's playing checkers.
I see. Okay.
He's five moves ahead of everybody else. Has a contingency plan because algorithm, he knows what to do. If that goes wrong, okay, well, then we're going to have to do this instead. So he's very logical in that manner. So it's not one directive. It's we're moving pieces and we're going to make it happen.
So this is a whole side quest that you could definitely drop into a civilization point in your game. And then it's up to the dungeon master to maybe have like a couple of different variables that you could run through to be able to successfully tackle this side quest as far as like, okay, it's like putting up advertising posters here. You convince a town crier there. You go and, you know, do a drinking contest at one of the pubs and then prove that the Big Ale is worse tasting. So there's a couple of different like mini games or something you do as part of this side quest.
This is unfortunately splitting the party, but it's a little light splitting the party. You don't have to go, you know, it's not like major quest lines. You might just have to set it up in a manner where quick things here and there. How did you do? How many posters did you put up? I love the drinking contest thing of like, here, I'll tell you what, you drink as many of Big Ale's drinks as you can. I'm going to drink this one. Look at these belching, burping, feels like crap. I'm feeling great. This is so much better. Like, you know, different little things that like, so then they start to, oh, next time I do a chugging contest, I'm going to totally use a better beer because that's something, you know, all these little things that are all going to add up to eventually, it's like, guess what? We found out that Big Ale's watering their beer down. Do you want to buy watered down beer or do you want your local townsfolk who have been here for generations? Do you want to support the small business? We're creating a co-op where all of these other small businesses are working together. So if you are an entrepreneur, you can totally buy into this as well.
The formation of the Brewers Guild in the community.
Yes. Yes. That's a great idea.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I like it. Yeah. So we're bringing in some of the 4E skill challenge mechanics. So everyone's like, quick, what skills can I use in our little mini game around the town side quest to figure out how we're going to prove that the local ales are better than Big Ale? Okay. So so it sounds like we've got like a pretty rough idea of how that's all, you know, figuring out, and then the players are doing that and they're succeeding. What's going to be their reward? So they do all these things, they convince the town that, hey, Big Ale's not worth it. Big Ale like leaves or makes a huff or whatever. Everyone rallies around and, you know, this Brewers Guild is formed. What's going to be the reward for the players?
Ooh. So one funny thing I did in my homebrew campaign where I was talking about Bell End Brewery is they burn it to the ground, and my brother's character was named Hondo Lone Star. So you can absolutely know exactly what kind of character that is. and you being from Texas, what ale started showing up at all the space? Hey, guess what? We got that new Lone Star beer at our...
And I don't drink Lone Star. I'm a Shiner Bock guy.
There you go. In game, it's the better beer. But like, I see. Now their brand, they got it named after them. So wherever they now go, like, guess what? You know, they walk into a pub or a restaurant or a, you know, whatever food, whatever they're at. Guys, we just got the new Lone Star beer. Oh, wow. And every time they hear it, they look at each other. They're like, that's right. We did that. So their reward is seeing that they helped the little guy now succeed, and it's spreading. So they see that success that they helped the guild make, and now they're seeing that the guild is becoming so popular that brand is now popping up in other areas, and maybe like if there's a secret nod or handshake, they get that on the house. You know what I mean? They earn getting the ale on the house if it's from the co-op, so they can just party and get drunk for free.
Hey, players always like an excuse for that. Okay.
Absolutely.
But now we have to consider the other side of the coin. What's going to be the consequence of failure or refusing the call to the adventure? Is it going to be like a total Stardew Valley thing, and now the town is like, we're all hooked on Big Ale, and it's not great.
Big mega corp, like super branded, like Wall-E. Did you ever see that Disney
Big
movie?
And large.
Big and large. Big and large takes over everywhere. There is no uniqueness. Everything is, you're getting hosed out of money. Everyone is just, it's all fluff. It's all BS. There's no heart in anything. And you go into this town, it's just, this place sucks. Like nobody's unique. No, nothing is. So it destroys the small business, and big megacorp takes over. So now we're getting in cyberpunk territory now as well. But that could certainly be in a manner that's more appropriate for the setting. So,
right.
You know, this whole town revolves around Big Ale now, and this company has so much power that they are influencing the local politics. They are influencing local laws and jurisdiction. They have influence over the town's military might. Like, well, we've got the town's military protecting our brewery because we don't want any outsiders to come in, but then they can use that military for nefarious reasons. And so like that influence can be felt in a lot of different areas, almost like a Dune and the what are their names, the women that have like the speak,
the Bene Gesserit,
yeah, where like there's the kings and queens are still doing their thing, but in the background there's some influence going on. It's Big Ale.
Big Ale.
big ale, those jerks.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about liches, you don't have to worry about Vecna. It's Big Ale.
Yes, because, I mean, in Lugo, like I said, not the most efficient fighter. That's not the kind of battle he needs. He needs to fight for the small guy so that mass populace of average everyday folk get better, which in turn, in the long run, may spawn your heroes, your much stronger heroes, to prosper in that area, get the support they need. And those are the folks that are going to be slaying the dragons.
There we go. And yeah, I mean, unless you feel like there's any other territory to explore for the character, I think we've got a pretty well-rounded NPC.
I think so. The only other note that I put is like insight up the rear end. So like can logically determine if somebody's trying to BS him or what their, you know, intent is with what they're doing, how they speak, just because that's the algorithm at work. I like the idea of the co-op, the guild creating. Yeah. Excellent. I like that.
All right. Well, now we get to take this character that we've made and we get to throw them into a random encounter. This random encounter is brought to you by Zencastr. Now, ever since I've heard about Zencastr from Dane and Benjamin over at the Dispel Magic podcast, I've just been wildly impressed using this. It's what I've been able to get those podcasts recorded, and then I've been able to take the audio, get that edited, and get it out to you. It's so easy. It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. You log in using your browser, you start recording a high-quality podcast right away. You can record studio quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings of the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. You can sound your best with Zencastr. Have you ever worried about what you might sound like? Why Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording, and it removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. And I have to say, I took the advice from Anson, one of our wealthy level Patreon supporters, and I decided to get one of the paid plans. So now I have access to these tools. And if you've noticed in the last couple of episodes, you really should be hearing those same qualities come through in the edit. It's all in one. So if you have thought about starting a podcast before and you're realizing that you need a lot of different tools and services, well, those days are done. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcasting platform, you can create your podcast all in one place, distribute to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SIDEKQPODCAST and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. So again, the code is SIDEKQPODCAST on the website, zencastr.com/pricing. Thank you so much to the sponsor, and back to the podcast.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes, this is the part where we get to do a very small vignette with the character that we've made today. So we get to do a little scene, a little bit of role play, a little bit of D&D. So I think you've done a great job of making Lugo, and now we've fully discovered who this character is. But the question becomes, what kind of scene are you interested in showcasing Lugo off in? Is it going to be Lugo encountering one of our podcast adventurer characters to give them the side quest? Is it Lugo talking with this small merchant who's like forlorn and depressed and can't figure out, you know, oh, I'm doing everything right, but why can't I succeed? Is it a flashback in Lugo's back in the antiquities business? Or what kind of scene are you interested in showcasing him off in?
What about some representative, it does not have to be highest ranking big ale individual, but someone from the ranks is realizing that Lugo has consulted with local small business, small ale, little ale.
Mm-hmm.
And Lugo has been caught asking questions, trying to figure out some things. And Big Ale is now confronting Lugo about that, I guess.
Yeah, we could do a scene with that. So, okay, the scene will be that Lugo is being confronted by some person within the organization of Big Ale, and then we'll have the scene play out from there. Not have to roll any dice for combat or anything like that, but an interesting, maybe tense interlude.
So after Lugo has consulted with what he hopes to be the new brewery guild in this fine city, he's been asking about Big Ale's involvement in suppressing the joy that comes from enjoying the small craft breweries in the area. He's went to local pubs and restaurants to determine why do they constantly sell Big Ales and not the, you know, their neighbor who they could be supporting. They understand, you know, he's looking at volumes. He's been caught holding up ale to the light to see its clarity and its, you know, flavor, and determining that by all accounts, our little folk here should be winning this battle. People love it. Why is this happening? And he was asking too many questions.
Yeah. So we've got we'll probably say kind of like a bruiser looking sort of dwarf, maybe used to be like a pit fighter or something like that. But, you know, his cousin worked for Big Ale and he got out of a dwarven jail. And now he's cleaned up. And so now he's in a very nice suit. But, you know, he's obviously got like very menacing tattoos and some old scars and stuff like that. And so maybe he's come to this pub where Lugo is doing his investigative work and asking questions.
Yeah.
And so then this dwarf. Yeah. And then this dwarf will be like, we'll say something in dwarvish to try and get his attention and then switch over to common and say, I think you've been asking quite a number of questions about our products. Are you interested in perhaps an investment opportunity with us?
No, actually, how come your alcohol content is far less than, you know, Lone Star beer on the side here? So I've been noticing that it is not nearly as clear and quality and craft as Lone Star. You're based on your appearance, you're obviously not the brewmaster. Do you have somebody, you know, more important or higher up that I could speak to about this?
Oh, that starts to set off some nerves for him. So he kind of groans, cracks his neck a little bit. And he's like, I'm here on behalf of the brewmaster. And you know what? Our product is good. It is great. Everyone in this town loves it. And he kind of does like a big gesture to the room and gets them all to cheer and stuff like that. And then, you know, even to maybe push it further, he like raises an eyebrow to be like, oh, I'll show you. And he sets down a fat sack of cash on the bar and he's like, you know what? A round for everyone of the best ale in this town, the only ale that matters. And so then the bar crew are just pouring them because they're like, well, we got to do it. I mean, you just paid us. And so, and everyone's like, yeah, and they're cheering and they're all this stuff. But meanwhile, like, you know, he can tell that Lugo's not buying it, but he's trying to, you know, pass it off at like, hey, it is what it is, man. And, you know, this is what it is.
So he looks around at, you know, all the individuals and, you know, being as insightful as he is, he very much can determine, like, you do know they're cheering for free. They're not cheering for quality. Excuse me. And he sees somebody in the establishment that looks like there's a crowd around, you know, they're the life of the party, kind of sees who the influential people are in the room in any given time. And that's like the party animal who's got a big group. Excuse me. If I give you 50 gold, will you do a taste test and let me know which beer you prefer? Like, I will absolutely buy you as many beers as it takes, but would you be willing to run a quick little survey for me?
Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's their beer. Here, give it a swig and, you know, he watches that person drink it.
Yeah. And so he's, oh, yeah, this is pretty, pretty good. And then the other guy's kind of like,
Can you tell me, what is that? No, I noticed that as you swallowed, you know, you had a little bit like a, oh, like, what is that taste that you get in the back of your throat there? Because it looks like you winced just slightly. What is that taste? Can you describe that?
You kind of got a bit of a bite on it. Like, you know, it's like drinking rocks a little bit. Yeah.
Ooh, that doesn't sound like it's the best. Hey, I got something for you. My buddy over here, you might know them. They're at Lone Star Brewery. They're a couple, you know, couple streets down there. Sam over here has actually, his grandfather opened this. He's very local. You might know the family. They've been here.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Sam? Here, let me give you, Sam actually makes them. Let me give you a try of this and let me know what you think. And the whole time he's also looking, he's more focusing on the big ale guy. Like, here, you know, he's pouring it to the other guy, but look at, here, give this a try. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, this is like butter, man. This is awesome.
Oh, so you actually prefer this beer than the other one, huh?
Yeah, I don't know why Sam didn't tell me. Guys, look at this stuff. And he like gets his group to like cheer. And he's like, come over here and try this.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. Hey, just to let you know that this is always available. So if you ever want to, you know, step up your game, you know, you seem like a well put together individual who knows a good drink. I'm assuming you know a good drink, and you know,
yeah.
Lugo knows, like, this party, he doesn't really care, but like, oh, you hyping him up. Like, you are smart. You are a very smart individual, knowing how to say the right thing to the person to get them to say what's like, yeah, you should totally. I'll tell you what, I'll get you another round on the house for you guys. Here you go. Because Lugo is incredibly wealthy because he sold off his business. He has so many resources, but he's not like showing it off. I mean, let me get you guys another round for the, hey, everyone, how about you? You could choose whatever you want. You know, I'll pay for anyone who wants a Lone Star, or if you want big ales, I mean, you could totally have that too, but feel free, drink up.
Yeah. And now this guy definitely kind of looks like taken aback, but there's like a fire in him now that he's just kind of like, I don't think I caught your name. Do you mind if I might know that?
Oh, yeah, I'm Lugo Abergast, and that's with two A's. So that way it is first on any drink list. You know, I'm here consulting with Lone Star here. So if you have any questions or concerns, you know, you could address them to me directly, and I will take care of that for them.
Yeah. And so him, like, you know, he just paid for all these drinks, and then you're doing the taste test and showing him up to his face. Yeah. He's just kind of like, and he takes the, you know, the card or whatever. He's like, Lugo Abergast. Yeah. Okay. Well, we might see if we have need of consulting. And without much further opportunity for him to end himself back up in the slammer, he's just going to go ahead and, you know, take the card. And he's just going to very abruptly leave, muttering under his breath and dwarvish about what he witnessed and what he was a part of.
And I would say that to end right before he walks, I'm like, oh, could you hold on 1 second? And he grabs the gold that put on the bar top to get, you could take this back, and gives the gold back that he paid because nobody wants to drink. Say, here, you take this with you. There you go. Throws it at him. Like, all right, have a good one.
Oh, yeah. No, he catches it, and there's like his, you know, he's like gripping the money very hard, you know, veins and blood vessels like but just bulging in his neck as he's trying to hold back the rage. And so yeah, then like the cinematic thing is like it cuts to his face and he pulls out like a speaking stone as he's walking away from the pub and he's like, hey, we got a problem. And then it's like cut to black. And awesome. Scene. So we did it. Yeah. So what did you think getting to be Lugo Abergast?
The rolling for the race totally threw me off, but I had to figure out how to bring it back because I had the idea for the gist, the character, like vibe, the story, and I tried to wedge in that to it, which, you know, some people try to do it the opposite way, but it would be interesting. I'd have to do a little more research on like the background of the race, how they act. Obviously, you said they're lawful, how the mannerisms maybe or things like that. But no, it was fun to be somebody who knows right from wrong, can just knows how to say the right thing, knows how to play the game. Again, we're playing chess while other people are playing checkers. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that vibe of the character.
Awesome. Yeah, and certainly thank you for bearing with me as you know we had our you know well hopefully I've done a good job in the post production process and listeners are confused when I said oh we had technical difficulties because then that means that Zencastr's tools and my own know-how after now beginning 5 seasons of the podcast I have somewhat of an idea of how to handle and take care of so certainly thank you for that but yeah this is now our what we call our final thoughts section of the show. So basically I'm just trying to, you know, get a vibe check. I know, and just see how your experience was on the podcast and, you know, just overall, you know, what do you think of this endeavor?
I love it because my games are at the point we only can play once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So I get antsy wanting to just create characters again. Everything that in the two games that I'm in are incredibly homebrewed. So we do like just making things up. I should incorporate using tables more because that drastically changed, you know, some of the stuff I was doing is relatively cookie cutter. Like, oh, yeah, make some guys coming in, saving the spot, knowledgeable, can do everything. But using some tables to really change things up, even little details can drastically change the character, what they do, how they act. And I need to incorporate that more into my games as well to switch things up. So I think that part is a lot of fun to be like, oh, the dice said this is how it's got to be. Okay. And trying to work through that is a lot of fun for me. I like the creating side of things quite a bit. So I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. And we've got a whole backlog of, at this point, like 120 episodes or so, and all kinds of characters that have been made. So if you're, you know, you've got a month or weeks or however long till your next game, you can just kind of browse through the backlog and be like, yeah, you know what? I think I do need a Death Knight chimney sweep that works, you know, for a lich, you know, in my game. Or I need an adorable GIF child grave digger in my game, you know, whatever it may be.
Is there a ridiculous character that stands out that you like, I can't believe this is what happened on an episode?
Oh, well, you might be interested, because I'm looking at our list here of episodes. You might be quite interested in an episode that we did with the founder, CTO co-founder of a Demiplane, Mr. Travis Frederick, Binwick, the Death Tyrant Chef. And that, for my homebrew, has been the invention of this fabled interdimensional chef's guild, that they have these magic books that give them recipes to be able to cook whatever they need. But you have to, like, once you start making a recipe, like, you have to follow it to the letter. Like, you can't deviate from it. And that's how they're able to maintain these, like, high levels of prestige. And they have members of this guild that range from all different ancestries and realms and planes of existence that all belong to them. And that's how they're able to curate such a wide base of recipes and stuff that they can use. So yeah, that was a Death Tyrant Beholder who was part of this chef's guild, who needed you to go to this dungeon, funhouse dungeon, in order to acquire just one tiny ingredient that they needed, but they couldn't leave the kitchen or else, like, it would cause problems. They'd have to forfeit their guild membership, and you know, and then they would, the code of the chef's guild, which is in my homebrew game I've now been running. I'm still trying to think of a fancy name for it, but I do think of a nickname that at least the Feywild community gave them is, oh, they call them the Iron Chefs or something like that. Like, that's the colloquial name of the common people, but there's like a bigger, fancier title that they go by.
That is awesome. I love it. I made with Kraken Dice. I helped design like my own set of dice called the Gastronom. Like, I think it's still available. And the shtick was, there's also a card in there that has a picture of me. So it's a Chef Mike that if you bring it to your DM, you can add Chef Mike to your home game. So my players decided to have Chef Mike, like, hey, we see Chef Mike over there. And now he's like a NPC in their adventuring party. He's on the boat cooking food for everybody. But it's literally, I have to play me as me, like, hey, what's up, in the game, which is pretty funny. So maybe I'll have him have to interact with this chef in some manner.
Yeah.
For either just or nefarious reasons. So I'll use that for sure.
Yeah. So that's episode number 66 with Travis Frederick, which I hope if new listeners haven't been that far back in the catalog that they will. So certainly as we're here in the closing moments, and I always love to leave the stage, the platform, the microphone, the soapbox, the what's a who's it over to the guests. So, you know, thank you so much, Chef Mike, for being here. And I want to give you that opportunity to plug your projects, where we can find you online, and then just any passions or causes that you care about that we, the community, should know about.
Sure. So, I mean, you could find me on all the socials, and my last name is spelled just like it sounds. Harris, H-A-R-A-C-Z, Harris. You catch me on Heroes Feast, which new episodes are Mondays. I think we're halfway through the season, maybe a little more. on the Amazon Freevee channel or on Plex. It's part of that Wizards of the Coast Dungeons and Dragons adventure channel, along with Faster Purple Worm Kill Kill and Encounter Party. And I guess my final comment is, don't be scared to get in the kitchen. Give it a try if it's not your place. I highly recommend, if you are trying to learn and experience and practice in a kitchen, order your pizza first so you do not have to worry about the food thing turning out. You will have pizza ready to go, but hopefully what you're making turns out great as well. You could have it tomorrow. That's fine. But give it a shot. I think more people need to just hang out in the kitchen and have some fun.
Awesome. Well, Chef Mike. Yes, Chef. Sorry, just thinking of all the things you're supposed to say to chefs and all that. But thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I can't wait to have you back on making even more interesting NPCs.
Yes, love it. I'll be back very soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sidekicks and SideQuests. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Overcast, or feel free to save the RSS feed to use the app of your choice. If you don't like using podcast apps and services, I'm proud to announce that I'm in the process of uploading the podcast to our very own dedicated YouTube channel, which you can find by searching for Sidekicks and SideQuests. All future episodes should automatically publish to our YouTube channel. Visit our website, sidekicksandsidequests.com, for links, write-ups of the NPCs, and to learn more about the show and the guests who have been on it. To stay up to date and interact via social media, you can follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and the corresponding threads, Twitter, now rebranded X, and Reddit by searching for SideKQ Podcast. You can now also find a very tiny community on Discord as well. I would love to talk D&D and showcase your fan art, stories of how you used our NPCs, discussions, and commentary. If you'd like to hail the bard, simply send me an email at sidekicksandsidequests@gmail.com. To help this show be the resource it's meant to be, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes, 5 stars if you please, to help spread the word and share our podcast with your friends and family. Whether you're a veteran player or an aspiring dungeon master, there's something here for everyone, and I want to hear about it. As mentioned in the NPC creation section of the show, I do in fact have a Patreon for the podcast. If you love this podcast and you want to help support us and take our show to the next level, I would appreciate it if you would go to patreon.com/sidekicksandsidequests. No matter your lifestyle expenses, we have wonderful rewards at every level of Patreon membership tier. Modest, comfortable, wealthy, and aristocratic accommodations await, and we welcome all patrons to the Levitating Platter. Seriously, your financial support allows for this passion project to continue to invest in itself through the tools that will take our production to the next level, as well as provide more content for our patrons and the community at large. Please consider supporting me on Patreon if you can.
Sidekicks and SideQuests is unofficial fan content permitted under the fan content policy, meaning I'm not approved or endorsed by Wizards. Portions of the materials used are property of Wizards of the Coast.
Copyright Wizards of the Coast, LLC.
Thank you for your support, and I'll see you at the pub next time.
Bard rock on 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4!